Indie Media Global Report on Resonance FM 104.4. Check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
In a democracy, the ignorant and meddlesome outsiders, the general population, have to be kept from interfering. They can be spectators, but not participants.
No matter how much legal action you put behind this, people are going to do what they want to do.
Spectators, but not participants.
All before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome.
It's time to talk about censorship.
I'm in Nablus, and I'm privileged to be with the head of the Palestinian Prisoners Society for the whole of the West Bank.
I'm Kadura Faris. I'm from Ramallah district. I'm also an ex-prisoner. I spent myself 14 years in the Israeli jails between 1980 until 1994. I have been a member in the Palestinian Legislative Council, and I have been a minister in between 2003 until 2005. And now I am leading this society. I am one of those that the founders of this society when I am in jail.
What does the Prisoners Society do in the West Bank?
To get the voice of the prisoners outside. There is a lot of victims in the Israeli jail. A lot of crimes happened against our colleagues, our friends in the Israeli jails. We give information to the media about what's happened in the jails. We give a lot of international institutes information, like the Red Cross, the UN, the Human Rights Committee, the UN, and we prepare every year a report about the Israeli policies against our prisoners. These policies don't respect the international agreements and the international law. They don't respect, they humiliate the prisoners. And we have 31 lawyers represent the prisoners in the Israeli military court. And these lawyers also visiting all the Israeli jails to check with the prisoners about their situation, what's happened there. And we have also a local radio and TV. We use this radio and TV to tell the public the news about what's happened in the Israeli jails, and to know about our Palestinian rights. And also we have a college for rehabilitation. Not only the prisoners, also the injured or anyone need a rehabilitation. We are studying them, graphic design, mechanic, electric. And we are making demonstrations, meetings, the letters from the prisoners, the messages of the prisoners to the high level, if it's for the organization or for the authority, the president, the government, and the PLC, Palestinian Legislative Council.
Why are there so many political prisoners in Palestine? Why are there so many political prisoners?
Because there is an occupation, and the occupation uses the much primitive ways when we deal with the Palestinian issue. For example, we have much more than 800 of administrative detainees in the Israeli jails without court, without any reason. And there is a child in jail under 18, and now we have two small children, Yusuf, 2 months, and Rada, 2 years. They are in jail with their mothers.
Did their mothers give birth in jail?
Yes. And everyone have to know how the women have been in jail. The Israeli belong to the Israeli orders. Any prisoners go to the hospital, he should be close to the bed. He should be chained in the bed. And also the women that they have been in jail, they should, the soldiers, have to implement this dirty order. It's catastrophe for women to have her child when she is in not realist or not objective situation.
So she is giving birth.
Yes.
But she's kept chained.
Yes. The child, he have to stay with his mother or her mother for 2 years, and after that, they release the child.
Could you tell our listeners what administrative detention is and where it came from?
Unfortunately, it came from the mandate regime here in Palestine.
The British mandate.
The British mandate, yes, in 1945. And this mandate, this law came situation of the Second War. And it was in the situation of war, and the Israelis take this law and they continue respecting this primitive law in 2008, unfortunately. Now, what does it mean? Any officer of the Israeli army, he can decide as a court that he will arrest X any Palestinian for 6 months. And he can renew, after every 6 months, renew this order without the prisoners, the detainee himself, don't know what, why, they don't tell him, and they don't tell the lawyer why. And the Israeli military court said, because secret reason, we convinced that we have the right to continue arresting him.
And how long do people get held altogether under this kind of law?
The first one, it's been 7 years and 6 months. His name is Ali Jamman. Now, the oldest one in the Israeli jail, his name is Mahmoud Masalma from Hebron area. He's 54 months in jail, administrative, yes.
And when did they start using this law? Was it at the start of the Second Intifada?
No. They used this law from 1967. But before the First Intifada, they used this kind of arresting for those that they don't themselves in the investigation. They don't recognize what the Israelis said to tell them, then they save him in jail by this law. But in 1981, Israel create, this is bad creation, they create a new law, this law called Tamir law. There is no need to me to recognize that I did before what the Israelis said. If any friend or not friend tell them that I make an operation against the Israelis, they can take me to the court and they can judge me like that I recognize.
Without evidence?
Without evidence, yes. And in the first intifada, they use this kind of orders, military orders, with thousands of Palestinians. And they continue now.
And they arrest women, children,
yes,
men?
Yes. Yes.
Under, it's called administrative detention.
Yes, it's not a big number about the child and women. We have 4 women that under administrative arresting, and there's several, maybe 15 young people under 18 in the administrative, under administrative detention.
Have people died in jail whilst under administrative detention?
No, but within the last 31 years, between 1967 until now, 195 Palestinians have been died in jail. Part of them died because some medical problems, some of them within the food strikes, some of them have been killed within the first period, the investigation.
Who killed them?
The Israeli, the Shabak, and the soldiers. in the jails.
How did they kill them?
How? For example, if you the last one that he have been killed, he have been shooted at the end of 2007 in Sirot jail, and they killed Muhammad al-Ashqar and injuring 250 persons have been injured, part of them dangerous injured.
How did the people who saw the killing of Muhammad Chasra, how did they describe to you what happened?
Yes, they tell us that the midnight the Israelis want to check the rooms, which is not acceptable by the prisoners to wake them up. And when the prisoners tell the administration, you can make this step in the morning, the Israelis attack the two sections. And within the clashes with the prisoners, they shoot against the prisoners. And the prisoners themselves, they burn their furniture, if there is a furniture there. Some bags, and he had been shot, Muhammad al-Ashqar.
And he was killed?
Yes. And now, for example, there is 52 legislators in the Israeli jails, from Hamas, Fatah, and Popular Front. Legislators, their main problem that they make against the Israelis, that the Palestinian people elect them to represent the people, because the people respect them, and they have confidence. And because they have confidence, they should be in jail.
Also, what happens to the families when their relatives are in jail?
The families suffering like the prisoners themselves. Take in mind that part of these prisoners, when they arrest him today, it means that maybe tomorrow they are dismantling his home. Then the family will find that they lose the father, for example, and the home. The father, if he work, and all of them are working, and they have income to give opportunity to his child, or to his wife, or his mother, they stop the sources of how to continue life. And now they have the family, as you know, we are somehow a conservative mentality here. The women have not everywhere, mainly in the villages, allowed to be in the city to check with the Red Cross. The woman that her husband arrest, which means that she have to go to the city, to the Red Cross. She have to check about her permission to visit her husband. He have to be care to her children, to the home, to send the money for her husband, and to be care about her children, the schools, the responsibility. It's a lot of families make shock when the Israelis arrest the father of the family.
That's where the workers, women's societies try to help, isn't
yes.
it?
There is some NGOs and some local women institutes that are to create something to find a way to how to continue life by respectable.
What would you like people in London to do to try and show support or solidarity for prisoners inside, Palestinian political prisoners inside Israeli jails?
I want to tell them, they have to know. I myself, for example, as an example of the prisoners, I am one of the main persons fighting for peace. We are struggling for peace. We open dialogue with the Israeli community, with the Israeli representative. We initiate a lot of activities to achieve peace here. Israel try do their best to marketing these persons as a terrorism. Before 1 month, there is an Israeli institute make a pool inside the Israeli jails. And they find that 87% of the prisoners support the principles of the peace process in the region, which means that they accept the principle of two states for two people, which means that our prisoners is not criminals, they are not terrorism, they are fighters for freedom. The British people, if they are under incubation, thank God you don't try what does it mean incubation, but you have to know what does it mean incubation when you have been the occupied state. Now, if the British people suffering from an incubation, those that they arrest the incubation, you will look at them as a heroes of the British people. And we look, and the all the world should look to these people as a fighters for freedom. Because if the mentality of the incubation will roll this world, several milliard of the people will suffer.
Thank you very much.
الهدف من هذا المهرجان هو عودة البسمة على وجوه الأطفال.
The main goal for this festival is to give the happiness of the child for the children of prisoners.
وإرسال رسالة إلى جميع العالم من أن من حق أطفالنا أن يعيشوا كباقي الشعوب.
And send a message for the international community that our children have the right to live as all other different children all over the world.
وأن يفرحوا ويمرحوا كباقي الأطفال.
To have a fun and play like the rest of the children all over the world.
Thank you. What's your name and what are you doing?
I'm Tahir Kousa. I'm the Activities Coordinator of Medical Relief Society Youth Center.
And what does the Youth Center do?
The Youth Center has many activities like the different divisions. In the beginning it was for volunteers as a center for them. And then it started to make courses of capacity building, life skills, leadership and voluntary and social work and voluntary activities.
And what is happening here today in Nablus?
Today, especially we thought in Medical Relief Society in 2003 that all of the children have a psychological problem because of the Israeli attack and the Israeli operation in Nablus. So we thought, besides that we have martyrs and killed and prisoners, we thought to have a smile day for the children. So it was a very brave step from Medical Relief Society in 2003 to make the first and biggest spring festival in Nablus for all of the children. So they were joined like 5,000 children in this festival. And we make it as an annual activity to make it every spring, every April with the children. And for the last and this year, the Prisoners Club, because of the Prisoners Day on 17th of April, so we cooperate with them to make this big festival.
And what is going to happen today?
I hope that all the children will be happy and you're going to see what's going to be. The festival includes grounds, dabka, which is the Arabic traditional dance, choral, and many, many entertainment activities.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
زعفة أكبر يا جماعة اسمها فطورة فطورة يعني من فارس فارس بني ريح فارس بني رام الله اسمها زعفة كبيرة
Say when their children in Nablus, when their children say, I want to be a musician. I mean, is there much work for musicians at the moment?
You can't make a living out of music.
No.
So people, two kinds of people. If not three. There are some people just a way of show off. As what children should learn some French and should know a musical instrument and things like this. Many others who are the majority look at it as a good hobby. I mean, nobody would ever think of it to make a living, because no way to make a living out of music, a good hobby. There are people who really appreciate music and they would like their children to know, to do something like those whom they watch.
Mm.
Yeah, so at the end all of them like that their children learn it. But they don't all like how we do it. Find sometimes all girls want to go for piano, as if imitating what they see on TV.
Who do they want
to
be?
Like they watch in films.
Oh.
I mean, that beautiful girl, talented girl who comes to play on the piano.
Or cello.
That's a show off. Yeah, well, people don't really, everybody wants to go for violin or piano, because it's a limited knowledge. For people, they don't know a lot about Western instruments. So the majority comes from only the piano. Why I say that they don't like our system, because we have an idea. Our project is supported through musicians, teachers. And, costing a lot, and it is a very limited chance for the time. So we reserve it to the very talented and serious. We can't take everybody who just wants to learn, and it's not always their own choice. We have to consider their preferences, but at the same time, at the end, it's the teacher's decision. They fit, they don't fit, and sometimes many who fit because of the limited space or the limited vacancies, if you can call it. We have to take the best either in talent, not only in talent and being serious. We need to get the best out of the limited chance that we have.
Children afford good violins or get the time to practice on the piano? Do they have to come here early in the morning before school and things like that?
The chance is open for them, but I mean, we try, and it happens most of the time that they should have a piano. They're not doing it. They'll have the chance to come to practice whenever. Olivier will be the greatest help for this, because he's coming to teach people the repair and tuning of pianos and to do all the pianos around. And the even in other instruments, it's not easy for people to afford instruments. If you want a decent instrument, it's a disaster. It's full of cheap things. According to the musicians, it's dangerous to expose children to such noises coming out of those instruments. So we need good instruments. I think we are very lucky in this that we are getting support from some institutions and some private people, and mainly we have a good support from Music Fund of Belgium. I don't know if you've heard about the Music Fund.
Never.
It's, I don't know if you can call it an organization which works on collecting instruments, donations of instruments. They do fundraising, instruments raising to bring here to distribute to people. So the system is we give the students, we just charge a small rent for the students so they don't have to buy instruments. Of course, we can't do with pianos, but all other instruments, they could be rented.
Do people come from abroad to teach here, as well as Olivier? But do other people come from abroad to teach?
Actually, most of our teachers are coming from abroad for the time being, especially for the Western instruments. Because unfortunately, there are very few locals who can really master playing or can teach on Western instruments.
Mm.
So most of our teachers are from abroad, and they mainly come, in most of the cases, from Barenboim Said Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know about it. Barenboim Said Foundation, it started with an idea of making an orchestra which includes Israelis and Arabs.
Was Edward Said involved in it?
Yeah, that's what it's Barenboim Said. Yeah. It's Daniel Barenboim and Edward Said.
Yeah.
Then it expanded the idea of, that was always Edward's wish, to have proper musical teaching in Palestine. You know, he was a very good pianist, Edward. Mm. So the work of the foundation, you know, they started that orchestra, then they were adopted financially by Junta Andalusia, the province of Andalusia in Spain, to support them financially. So it expanded the project, or the foundation expanded to have musical teaching in Palestine. So most of the teachers that we have now are sent by the foundation.
How often do the children perform?
Perform?
Perform, yeah.
Not a lot, because mainly they are beginners.
Yeah.
I mean, we started this year, something like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And since you were learning violin, you'll know to do something, especially with violin, takes years and years. I think what makes it like this, I mean, especially in Nablus and wherever you go north of the West Bank, because of the hard life. They say that misery creates things. And the other thing, I mean, because of it is very closed, very, there is nothing to have, so they are just too much concentrated on their instruments. I mean, there are no cinemas, no nightclubs, no parks, no amusement, no fun. So this is what they have. So they really work hard on this.
Mm. What kind of music are you playing? Is the chamber orchestra playing, or what kind of music do the children play? What do they get to choose, or do you set them pieces?
It's not us, actually. There is a conductor who's working on them. not only for our children, all the children of Palestine, they are collecting the distinguished ones, or the ones who are doing well. So they played Brahms and they played some Mozart. What was it in Nazareth? Bizet. I think they played some Brahms or something like this. Some Mozart and so. You know, I'm saying the first and second clarinetists, that was among the orchestra is from all around Palestine. Here the chance is open to everybody. But he should have some kind of talent, and he'll have to be serious. We are using a very tough system. Not very tough, but a tough system, I told you, especially because it's costing a lot, so it should be used for serious. And it says there aren't many chances or many places, so we're using a tough system. Doesn't matter the financial thing, there is a certain charge that we are charging. Of course, it covers a very small part of the real cost, but still, even that that charge, it varies from one to one according to their financial situation.
How did the children get to hear about your school? Yeah.
We don't advertise because we don't have many places. But I mean, whomever, I mean, this is a small town, I mean, everybody cuffs all the town. That's why everybody tells the other. And we tell people just come for screening. If it is the right one, no matter where he is from. As I told you, it goes back. The main thing is talent and seriousness.
One of the things that I find about Palestine is there's singing everywhere, coming from the mosque in the Bethlehem of Beit Zahor, from the Greek Orthodox churches. How does religious music play a part in the children's training?
I don't know. I think it has an effect. I think it has an effect, you know, because people enjoy when the call for prayers or those songs come on. If it's a good one who's doing it, people enjoy it. And some of, you know, you can't really say, maybe there is some specialty in Nablus or in Palestine for the music, but altogether, it's Arabic music, and from the part of what we call bigger Syria, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Palestine, Iraq, it's almost the same system. Some of the most important singers and musicians, they started as those who are calling for prayers in mosques. It has an effect. There isn't much, but it was part, you know, the Sufi music or the Sufi singing. Can't find much of it, but I think it did an effect altogether. In Nablus, we have another special thing which could affect it slowly. You know, we have the Samaritans in Nablus. The Samaritans, they have some kind of their own music, their prayers, music and singing, which could affect people, because people hear it. The prayer part of it is singing. And they inherit it and they learn it generation after generation for the last, I don't know how many years.
What about Arabic poetry? What about Arabic poetry? Does that have any influence on music?
The real proper, even within the whole language, the Arabic language, you could see it's musical. And the poetry, it should be. I mean, there are, I don't know how to call them, like scales to keep the tone in all the poetry. And it is musical, and a lot of it is sung. And even, I mean, you can say this guy is good in reading poetry. Not anybody who reads Arabic can read poetry. The good ones, you feel in a way as if he's singing. I mean, there are the scales, the tones. even it's like an opera thing sometimes. Mm. I mean, moving.
Yeah.
I think it has a very big effect.
Would you bring poetry into the school here?
Actually, as I told you from the start, part of our main idea is culture.
Mm.
And poetry is a part of it. Some poetry recitals or recitals?
Recitals.
Recitals. Did arrange for that. And I think some of the children enjoyed these.
Mm.
Enjoy this, and I think it has an effect.
And what about drumming and dubka? Do you want to include dubka or?
It is in our plan, but the problem is, I mean, we don't have enough stuff, and the biggest problem financially, we don't have enough finances for that. It is part of the thing, like when you asked me about the Oriental thing. It is of a high priority for us to work on Oriental music because it's part of our culture. To go back, that was the main idea of our whole project. I mean, culture is identity. Culture is roots. So that's why we call our project some kind of resistance. So we should go back to our roots, our culture, and it helps us to understand other cultures as well.
When I came here yesterday to speak to you, you introduced me to Olivier, who's come from France, and you explained to me that to tune a piano for Oriental music, you need to understand Oriental music.
Of course.
You can't, even if you have perfect pitch, it's still a problem to tune the piano for Oriental.
For any instrument. I mean, even in, I don't know a lot about music, in the tones, you know.
Mm.
In classical or Western music, you have till half a tone.
Mm.
Yeah. In Oriental music or Arabic music, you have a quarter of a tone. Even the Turks, they have 1/6 or 1/8 of the tone. So it's a totally different story.
Certainly in Morocco, things like the whirling dervishes, Sufism, drumming is a really strong part of, certainly you see it coming from Morocco, Algeria. Does that happen in Palestine or?
Yeah.
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 Are there still dervishes in Palestine?
There are very few.
Mm.
Very few. You don't really see them. I mean, they don't do public events, but there are even in Nablus.
Sheikh,
sacred.
You don't really have public events or such things.
Mm.
It's not like Morocco.
But
it used to be. Yeah.
They celebrate.
Yeah.
They demonstrate. It's religious celebration.
Mm.
Such as Ramadan,
yeah.
Muhammad, Prophet, birth.
Why is it smaller here, Sufism, say, than other ways of worshipping?
I think everything is smaller here. Because even the air that we can breathe is much more little than everywhere.
The space.
No, even the air. Yeah. The air, the space, everything is much more little.
Yeah, it is a little country.
It would have been enough for us.
maybe little chances.
Little chances.
You see how it is cut. Everything is shrinking.
You've made it very beautiful. And very quiet and peaceful space here. How do you think that affects the children who come?
I think it's building the spirit. It is. I mean, that was our main idea when we started the thing. As I told you, always culture. It makes spirit and music. I think it makes more spirit than other things. I think it's making the spirit. Call it an escape sometimes, or it's the only thing. I mean, you could fly with music, and this is the only thing which can exceed the barriers and checkpoints. Till now they can't confiscate it, even though they try. Yeah.
How do they try and confiscate music?
In all culture. Mm. I mean, especially when you talk about this town, you know, it's not just a military siege. It's military, political, besides, I don't know if I'm expressing properly, I mean, political to isolate this town. It's economical and cultural. I mean, if you look at the demolishing of the old town, I mean, invasions are every night. They rarely demolish a new building, just demolish in the old town, because this is the heritage or the culture, our culture. And if you really look at it, if you follow plans how they do it, if you look at maps how they are doing, it shows very clear that it is systematic. It is very systematic. And unfortunately, or sadly, those difficulties are caused even, like we call it, we have the siege of the enemies and the brothers. Everybody wants to strangle this town. So we really have difficulties. Sometimes they frighten foreign people to come here. All the obstacles in the world are put in their face to come here. And sometimes the very practical things when closures are. Mm-hmm. They just block people. I could show you a photo. Once we had a concert, we didn't have a piano at that time. So the musicians were bringing harpsichord, the cembalo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they wouldn't allow the track to go in with it. So I'll show you a photo for a great conductor carrying his cembalo and moving it into Nablus with the
wheelbarrow.
Trolley.
Yeah, those cars.
There's one of them. Sorry, this guy is Julian Salinkul. He's Baron Boehm's musical assistant in the Opera of Berlin. Berlin Opera.
And this is trying to get a harpsichord across.
Harpsichord and a contrabass.
Si. For the purposes of the radio, what I'm looking at is some of the world's top musicians trying to get a harpsichord through Hawara checkpoint, and they're being held up and stopped. This is to enable students and musicians inside Nablus to go ahead with their planned concert. And it was a harpsichord because at the time there wasn't many pianos in good shape inside Nablus. And so the soldiers wouldn't let you bring the harpsichord in through Hawara in a vehicle. So you had to push it through the checkpoint and then onto a van where all the taxis gather to take people from the checkpoint into Nablus City.
As I told you, culture what we meant, because as I told you, especially this town, more than other places in Palestine, the siege around it is military, political, economical and cultural. So, in a way, we thought it's some kind of resistance. Let that chance, let our children have that chance. And in a way, culture and mainly music is the only thing they can't really effectively capture or lock in between fences. About a Spanish pianist, a very well-known Spanish pianist. I told you the story, Olivier. Yeah, his name is Daniel Del Pino. Del Pino came 1-2 times to Palestine. I think he's the star of Spain. The Spanish cooperation were supporting his trips to come to do tours, to perform in Palestine.
and always in the south of the West Bank. Through a friend of ours, a Belgian lady who established the Culture Palace of Ramallah, they were to arrange his trip with the Spanish corporation. She asked him if he would come to Nablus. So, of course, everybody was mad. He shouldn't come to Nablus. And some obstacles. Even the Spanish corporation and the consulate, they lifted their responsibility. If you want to go to Nablus, you go on your own responsibility. So our friend Rita put him in her car. They came here. He didn't only perform. They even slept in Nablus for a day. They had a round in the town. They enjoyed it. So we became friends. I told you before that we are very lucky in France. And we are getting very, having very faithful friends. Okay, we kept in touch. A year after, or 1.5 years after, there was another tour for him. It was planned when the planning started in Spain, and he asked, I want to come to Nablus. So the Spanish corporation contacted me, and they talked about his coming, and you know, with all their exaggerations of security things and the bodyguards and the special security. Okay, after 2 months of talks and visits and corresponding, a few days before the concert, they just canceled it. Security regulations, he can't come. Okay. Of course, I had to write a very rough letter to them. And Rita, our friend from Moscow, now she's in Moscow, wrote a very rough letter, no response at all. He wrote me, they are sponsoring my trip, so I have to obey them. I can't do it, but I'll make it up for you. He wrote me, I have free time in between his concerts. I have free time, I can come these times, these days, you choose. Okay? So we agreed on the best time. He paid his own flight, came to stay 4 days in Nablus, not just to perform, worked with our children, did an unbelievable concert and went back. Which I call it another kind of solidarity.
Yes. And his name?
Daniel Del Pino. And even, he's unbelievable, this guy. Even before coming, since he has good time, he asked me if I want to arrange him concerts in other forgotten areas, let's say Tulkarem, Qalqilia, and so, but the problem, there were no pianos there.
This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Centre, imemc.org, for April the 12th through to April the 18th, 2008. As Israeli army attacks leave 30 Palestinians killed in Gaza this week, the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert set forth conditions for ceasefire with Hamas and the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. These stories and more coming up, stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with the non-violent actions in the West Bank. I am EMC's Manaj Rubin with the details.
11 protesters, among them a Palestinian journalist, were injured on Friday during the weekly protest against the wall in the village of Bel'in near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. As is the case each week, villagers of Bel'in, along with their international and Israeli supporters, conducted their weekly protest against the Israeli annexation wall on their land. After Friday prayers, the protesters marched from the village towards the gate of the wall, which separates the villagers from their farmland. The main theme of the event this week was solidarity with the Palestinian prisoners. As soon as the protest arrived at the gate, Israeli troops stationed there showered them with sound bombs, tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets. Witnesses told IMMC that troops deliberately attacked journalists to prevent them from documenting. Ammar Awad, a Reuters photojournalist, was lightly injured after troops shot him with a rubber-coated steel bullet. Another 11 protesters suffered from tear gas inhalation. At least 200 Palestinians from Al-Khadr village located near Bethlehem City in the southern part of the West Bank, along with international and Israeli peace activists, protested against the illegal wall Israel is building on the village's land. The protest was in the form of Friday prayer in the street in presence of around 60 Israeli soldiers. The protesters dispersed after the imam gave a speech to the worshippers and protesters calling for an ongoing nonviolent resistance to end the Israeli occupation. Speeches were delivered by the local organizers. Coordinator of the local Committee for Popular Resistance in Bethlehem, Samer Jaber, told IMMC that this Friday the protest was in solidarity with the Palestinian political detainees held by Israel. For IMMC.org, this is Manar Jibrin.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas visited Russia this week. His visit was preliminary to a Russia-sponsored international peace conference to be held soon in Moscow. This and more by IMEMC's Fouad Azir.
Last November, Washington hosted Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, which set the aim of reaching a solution by the end of 2008. As of yet, however, little progress has been made. While on a visit to Russia on Thursday, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas stated that unless Israel releases all Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails, a peace agreement is unlikely. From a Qatar-hosted trade conference this week, the Israeli Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni stated that the Islamist Hamas party in Gaza was an obstacle to peace with Israel. Meanwhile, Vice President of the European Parliament Luisa Morgantini issued a press release on Friday demanding a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, as well as an end to the siege imposed on the Gaza Strip, also condemning Israel's decision to deny ex-US President Jimmy Carter entry to the Gaza Strip. On the ground, ex-President of the United States Jimmy Carter met with Hamas Member of Parliament Nasr al-Sha'ar in the West Bank city of Ramallah. He described the meeting as good and stated that he hoped peace would be achieved in the region. This week, Carter also met with two other Hamas officials, Mahmoud al-Zahar and Saeed al-Siam, in Cairo. Israel and the United States criticized the Carter-Hamas meetings, with Israel asserting that Hamas is committed to the destruction of the State of Israel. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice stated, "I find it hard to understand what is going to be gained by having discussions with Hamas about peace, when Hamas is in fact the impediment to peace." Rice made her comments on Friday during a meeting with officials in Germany. Also this week, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert put forth his conditions for a ceasefire with Hamas and the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He demanded that Hamas stop firing homemade shells from Gaza onto Israel and that Israel maintain a level of control on Gaza's border crossings. On the ground, the Israeli army controls all crossings leading in and out of the Palestinian coastal region, including the Rafah-Egypt crossing. The London-based Arabic newspaper Al-Hayat quoted Palestinian sources stating that Hamas might accept the Israeli ceasefire offer, but that the Islamic Jihad resistance group in Gaza, as well as the Palestinian Authority, may not agree. The Palestinian Authority in Ramallah had offered to take control of Gaza's border crossings, yet Hamas refused the deal and asked for joint responsibility over the borders, especially the Rafah crossing terminal on the Gaza-Egypt border. Israel enforced a total closure on the coastal region in June of last year after the democratically elected Hamas took over the territory amidst a power struggle with the Fatah party of President Abbas. Israel says that Hamas calls for the destruction of Israel, while Hamas, since taking power after the January 2006 elections, has voiced readiness for a long-term truce with Israel. For IMEMC.org, this is Fouad Azir.
This week, the Israeli army attacks on Gaza left 30 Palestinians, including 8 children and a journalist, killed. From Gaza, IMEMC's Rami Amagari with the details.
On Monday, in the north of the Gaza Strip, the Israeli army extrajudicially executed 2 resistance fighters of the Al-Qassam Brigade, the armed wing of Hamas, wounded a third one. 5 other civilian bystanders, including a child, were injured in the attack. Palestinian medical sources in Gaza City reported that one Palestinian patient died on Monday at midday, succumbing to cancer after having been denied a permit to leave the Gaza Strip for a treatment by the occupying Israeli army. Suha Al-Jumpas, 22, had cancer and had applied several times to leave the Gaza Strip for medical care, but the Israeli army refused. The death of Al-Jumpas brings the number of Palestinian patients who have died in Gaza due to the 9-month-long Israeli siege to 133. On Tuesday, four activists of the Palestinian resistance group, the Al-Qassam Brigades, were killed and four others were wounded during armed clashes with the Israeli army troops that moved into the Sharjahia neighborhood in the east of the Gaza city. Meanwhile, on Wednesday afternoon during an incursion into Jahr al-Dik village in the central Gaza Strip, the Israeli army killed 13 Palestinian civilians, including 80 children and a journalist, and wounded 32 others, including 7 children. 5 Palestinian resistance fighters and 3 Israeli soldiers were killed during 3 different incidents in the Gaza Strip on Wednesday. Palestinian sources said the 4 fighters of the Al-Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, were killed when the Israeli army invaded Al-Shajaiya neighborhood east of Gaza City and clashed with Palestinian fighters at dawn. Meanwhile, Palestinian sources reported that a Palestinian man said to be an Islamic Jihad fighter was killed by Israeli army fire in the southern part of the Gaza Strip in the city of Rafah on Wednesday at dawn. 3 Israeli soldiers were killed when a group of Al-Qassam brigades managed to ambush them near the fuel terminal of Nahal Oz to the east of Gaza City on Israel-Gaza border line. Earlier on Wednesday, Israeli troops killed a Palestinian farmer and wounded 2 others in the northern Gaza Strip. Additionally, 12 Palestinians, including a child and 2 women, were wounded by army attacks and separate attacks throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian sources reported that the 3 Palestinian fighters died on Thursday, 2 due to previous ones and 1 during clashes with the Israeli army at midday Thursday. For IMEMC.org, this is Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
This week, the Israeli army conducted at least 48 military invasions targeting Palestinian communities in the West Bank. During those attacks, the Israeli army killed 3 resistance fighters and kidnapped 52 Palestinian civilians, including 14 children. IMEMC's Mary Smith has the details.
The invasions this week were concentrated in the cities of Nablus, Jenin, Hebron, and Bethlehem. With 52 civilians kidnapped this week, the number of Palestinian civilians kidnapped by Israel in the West Bank since the beginning of 2008 has mounted to 927. This week, the Israeli army continued to target and kill Palestinian resistance fighters. The latest was the assassination of a leader of the resistance in Balata refugee camp, located in Nablus city. Hani Al-Kabi, 22, the leader of the Al-Aqsa Brigades, the armed wing of the Fatah party, was killed when Israeli troops surrounded a house in Balata refugee camp and used bombs to shell it. Soldiers also kidnapped 2 other men, one of which was injured during the attack. During a pre-dawn attack on Thursday, which targeted Qabtiya town located near the city of Jenin, Israeli troops killed 2 Palestinian resistance fighters. Local sources in Qabtiya said that Israeli troops and a bulldozer invaded the town, then surrounded a house that was under construction. 2 fighters from the Al-Quds brigades were inside. Clashes between the Israeli soldiers and the fighters took place for several hours. The clashes ended when troops used explosives to attack the house, killing the 2 fighters inside. Medical sources identified the 2 resistance men as Bilal Ikmil, 26, and Izzeddin Idwat, 19. Ikmil was the leader of the Al-Quds brigades in the northern part of the West Bank, sources from the Islamic Jihad said. On Monday afternoon, the Israeli police demolished a Palestinian-owned house located in Anata neighborhood in the northern part of Jerusalem city. Witnesses stated that bulldozers and Israeli troops surrounded the house on Monday morning. Police officers forced the family out of their home and attacked them with batons. By Monday evening, the house was completely leveled, local sources reported. The Israeli police said the house was too close to the illegal annexation wall and that it was built without the required official documents. Israel rarely issues construction permits for Palestinians living in Jerusalem since occupying the city in 1967. Palestinian sources reported on Saturday that the body of a 16-year-old Palestinian child was found 2 days ago in Kibbutz Hatzarim area in the southern Hebron Hills. The leg of the child was amputated and the child bled to death after an explosive left by the army detonated near him while he was herding sheep in the area. For IMEMC.org, this is Mary Smith.
This week, the Palestinians mark the Prisoners' Day. The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas stated that no peace deal will be reached without the Israelis releasing those imprisoned. IMEMC's Ghassan Banoura with the details.
Hundreds of demonstrators mark Prisoners' Day. On April 17th of each year, Palestinians mark Political Prisoners' Day in solidarity of the Palestinians who are detained by Israel, with protests throughout the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Since 1967, when Israel occupied both the West Bank and Gaza, Israeli troops have abducted a total of 750,000 Palestinian prisoners for being involved in resisting the Israeli occupation, according to the Palestinian Authority. That would be the equivalent of having one member of every Palestinian family imprisoned at least once in their life. lifetime. At present, 9,750 people are held in detention by the Israeli military. 49 of those abducted by the Israeli army are Palestinian lawmakers who won the January 2006 parliamentary elections. Palestinian MP Isa Karaki', the head of the Political Prisoners Affairs Committee in the Palestinian Parliament, describes conditions inside the prisons.
The demonstrations are a clear indication that Palestinian society demands the freedom of all political detainees. In addition, it shows that Palestinians will not accept any deal that does not involve freeing political prisoners. The situation in the Israeli jails is deteriorating. 8 died during 2007, and 1 this year because of the bad medical care.
According to the Palestinian Authority report, over half of the 9,750 political detainees are either being held without a trial or were kept under administrative detention. If the detainees get a court hearing, it will be in a military court, even though they are civilians. In those courts, Israel apply what the report cites as secret charges, which the detainee and his or her lawyer are not allowed to see. The Israeli military record states that the Palestinian prisoners in the Israeli detention facilities currently include 330 children. Reports by the Red Cross and human rights groups say those children face interrogation by the army, and in most cases the children experience some form of torture. The abduction of Palestinians occurs frequently as the military searches and ransacks private homes, mainly in the West Bank, under the pretext that residents are resisting the army. Tamer Salah, a Palestinian child from Bethlehem, experienced these abductions firsthand.
I was 16 and a half years old when I was taken. I served 2.5 years, they said, because I used to throw stones at the army. They psychologically tortured me and they physically tortured me in the beginning. The good food was only on Thursday and Friday. The rest of the week it was bad. There was a 13-year-old boy from Amala with me. Each time the guards attacked us with dogs, he used to break down psychologically.
For IMEMC.org, this is Ghassan Bannoura.
And that's just some of the news this week in Palestine. For constant updates, check out our website, imemc.org. Thanks for joining us from Occupy Bethlehem. This is Louisa White.